Martha?
Yes, I'm on yet.
Thank you, ma'am.
I just got on myself, though.
Okay.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
We'll be starting momentarily.
Brandela.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Okay, we are starting with section 28 of Parsha Lech Lecha from the Zohar Sulam commentary. And we'll start with Pasuk 297. After we say L'shem Yehud. L'shem Yehud, Kud Shabarichu Ishkitei, Idhilu, Urhimu, Udhilu, Udhilu, Urhimu. Layakta L'shem Yudhei Bavavhei. The Yehuda Shalim B'Shem in Kol Yisrael, Limud Torah Mitzvah, La'asok Torah Mitzvah, Vayino Amadunai Eloheinu Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Kananei Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Kananeihu. Verse 297. Achar Hadvarim Ha'ele Rabbi Chia Yochawa Azil Mecheme Le Rabbi Elazar Begabeya Rabbi Chagai Amar Lo Hai Archa Im Tafna Chameya Bimar La'an Ihu Azel Amar Lo Lemecheme Le Rabbi Elazar Amar Lo Wana Name Ezil Bachadach Amar Lo Ike Kol Udlemizbar Sivara Lemai Vishma Zil Ilav To Avadras, Amar lo lo lechush, Mar lechai beha ana, Shemana kamaraze, Yoraita via, via keona, Vame kam beho. The translation, after these things, on his way to visit Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Chia met Rabbi Chagai. He said to him, this route which is set before you, sir, where does it lead to? And he answered, it leads to my visiting Rabbi Elazar. He said to him, I shall go along with you. He said, if you will be able to understand the wisdom and the reason behind what you will hear, then come along. But if not, then turn back. He said to him, sir, do not worry about this. because I have heard many secrets of Torah, and I was able to understand them. My commentary, did Rabbi Haggai need to show his ego? Did you learn the lesson that is in this pasuk? Questions, comments, thoughts?
I kind of thought it was kind of rude, but then on second thought, maybe that was his discernment that man didn't, and perhaps was trying to save him from making a trip for nothing. I don't know, expense wise, food wise, or whatever.
Well, start with the question: is it a physical trip or a spiritual trip?
Well, usually it is a spiritual trip.
Okay, it's a spiritual trip. Now, what does that tell you?
Ego.
Can you have ego in the spiritual realm?
No.
I kind of disagree.
You can, but you need to be working upon it to reduce
right.
it.
But sometimes I know if I had made that statement, it would have been because I knew the person and I felt like they were going to be miserable because they weren't ready, and it, you know, but it made even them maybe feel badly.
Well, the question can be asked.
Enough, yeah. You know, it's the beginning of a section.
But does it need to be answered? If someone asks you, are you ready for what's coming, do you have to answer them?
Well, that happened to me one time in, I would say, probably the 80s. And my friends knew that I was leaving the church world, and, you know, they used to ask me lots of questions whenever they had a question, and they couldn't understand why I was leaving the church world. And one came to my back door and said, I want to know what's, you know, why you're leaving and what it is that led you to want to leave. And I remember saying to her, and I meant it because I saw it with another person who almost had a nervous breakdown. And so I said, well, are you sure you really want to hear? And she said, yes, and she came in. And that's what I was pondering, because the other person was a man. And when he began coming with us, to study with a group of people who had come out of church, but as of yet didn't know where to go. Let me put it that way. That was way back in the beginning of our walk. And for 2 weeks, he really did almost have a nervous breakdown. You know, it was hard for him to, you know, to leave what he had believed about the man from Nazareth. And so,
I do understand what you're saying. I've had experience with a number of students along those same lines.
Mm-hmm.
But if we read the verse really closely, Rabbi Shia was going to Rabbi Elazar. On his way, he met Rabbi Haggai. He said to him, so now we have to ask, was Rabbi Shia saying it to Rabbi Haggai, or was Rabbi Haggai saying it to Rabbi Shia? Once you answer that question, then this discussion of the route. The question is being asked, where are you going? But it's not saying, where are you going? It's saying the route which is set before you, where does it lead you to? Which is not the same as saying, where are you going? And the answer is, it leads to my visiting Rabbi Elazar. And again, we have this, he said to him, who's the he and who's the him? I shall go along with you. Who is the I? He said, who is the he? If you will be able to understand the wisdom and the reason behind what you will hear, then come along. There's not a question in that statement. He's saying, you're welcome to come, but I'm warning you that there's going to be deep discussions, and you may not be able to understand it, and you might become bored. He's not asking him a question, can you? He's saying, this is a potential risk following this path. Now, again, we have the question. He said to him, again, who is the he and who is the him? And the person is saying, whichever one it is, he's saying, don't worry, because I think I'm capable. Now, my commentary is asking, does he really need to say that? Does he need to respond to the question, if you will understand, you're welcome to come along, but be warned, you may be bored. You may be not capable of understanding what you will hear. So if you don't go through this deep number of questions and look at this at the statements in both directions, every time it says he and him, it could be the other way than you're thinking. It could apply that Rabbi Shia was the him in the first one rather than Rabbi Haggai. Now, normally we don't know what Haggai, we don't speak of Rabbi Haggai. He's not one of the students of Rabbi Shimon, where Rabbi Shia is. But if you translate the name Haggai, you're talking about my holiday, my hug. Should I go on, or do we still have questions about what I've said?
No, I took it to mean that Rabbi was the one that asked Rabbi, do you think you should go? And of course, Rabbi, saying that they're going to Rabbi Elazar, I think that's Rabbi Shimon's son.
Yes, Rabbi Elazar is Rabbi Shimon's son.
So I didn't find it a problem with the he's and the hims, but.
I'm not saying that you should find it a problem, but it's easy to misunderstand the sentences and the interaction between the two men unless you ask the question. When we read this English translation, and we always have to remember it's a translation, it's not clear. You can interpret it if we read it without asking the questions, and then we would say, well, who is the he for you? And normally it's Rabbi Shia is saying to Rabbi Haggai. The route I am following, where does it lead? Where does this road go? But there's a deeper level to that. Where does the road go? Is it the road of Torah? Is it the pathway? And we've discussed a couple of times the difference between the word native and what's the public pathway? The Hebrew word will come to me.
Derek?
Derek, thank you. Derek is a public pathway. Anybody can follow it. Native means a pathway that's private. In the Sefer Yetzirah, the words are always native. It's always a private path. You have to follow it as an individual level. But here, they're meeting on the pathway. Does that mean that they're meeting in a spiritual meditation? Or does it mean they're following a public road?
Well, I felt like it was an introductory verse to the chapter, and that's always a lot of unknowns to come.
A lot of times in the Zohar, you're right. It is an introductory, but this is not. It's a little deeper. It is still an introductory verse because you aren't really clear on what's the discussion. If you don't read the summary and if you don't read the title of the section, you have no idea where it's going. You just have two men mentioning a third one. And you have background that Rabbi Elazar is the son of Rabbi Shimon. So he's going to be the teacher. But you have no knowledge of Rabbi Haggai, and you have some knowledge of Rabbi Shia. And I'm just dwelling on this and stressing it in order to teach people not to limit themselves with their understanding. Every verse in the Zohar, look for the other 70 explanations. Verse 298. Patach Rabbi Haggai, we amar my diktiv et karbani. Lach me leishai legomer et karbani da karban bizra deit kerav lekapara dema al dema basra al bayisra begin de kol karbanin lav mit karvin ela. Al bisra lekapara, al bisra. The translation. Rabbi Haggai opens the discussion saying, this is the meaning of my offering, the provision of my sacrifices made by fire. My offering refers to an offering of flesh, which is given for atonement. Blood of the sacrifice for the blood of man. Flesh of the sacrifice for the flesh of man. All sacrifices are offered only for the flesh. That is to atone for the flesh. With Rabbi Ashlag's comments, the pasuk is clear as written. Learn this teaching so that you can live this lesson. Questions? comments, thoughts?
Well, it didn't tell us that they got to their destination, but Rabbi Haggai is starting to expound on evidently secrets of the Torah that he studied. So no one else has said anything first. So perhaps he was on a level that he could see and know what the discussion might be.
Very possible. But I would think that if Rabbi Haggai is opening the conversation, coming from the place in the last verse of expressing an aspect of ego. And so now, as they're walking, he's starting to explain what he knows. As you said. But the discussion that he's bringing up is, what is an offering? And he's explaining that an offering is being offered for flesh instead of man having to die and have his flesh being offered. The animal has agreed, the soul of the animal has agreed to die on the altar so that the human being does not have to. Is that a possibility? Is that true?
Well, I think it's a possibility.
If it's a possibility, do you think it's true? Do you think animal sacrifices are broad so that the human being doesn't have to die?
My answer is yes.
I'm playing devil's advocate. So what you're saying is God created all of these species of kosher animals only for the purpose of having a human being bring them to the altar as a sacrifice so that the human being will not have to sacrifice himself in that way. He will not have to be slaughtered.
I don't think all kosher animals.
Go ahead, Malcolm.
I don't think all kosher animals were brought into creations for sacrifices of the human, for our flesh. But I know that they were sacrificed at the altar when the temple was in existence.
Yes. So what is the purpose of the animals?
Well,
what is the purpose of butcher animals?
Well, I think there's several purposes. My question to you is that these animals willfully went to be sacrificed. Was that due to their tikkun? Was that, you know, we talked about how reincarnation can come into a rock, it could come into grass, it can come into leaves, it could come into animals. And it was a release of that soul, right? So the animals willfully were sacrificed for that reason as well. That's my question to you. It wasn't just the human release of sin, but it was also the tikkun of the animals as well. or reincarnation?
And also, some of the animals were for the priest to be able to eat. And not this particular one that I think he's referring to, because he's referring to the animal instinct in man because of the sin nature to be the substitute instead of dying, like you said. But then the animals were always also created for man to eat.
Right. And they were also created, I mean, some of the animals were used for the Mishkan in the wilderness, you know, or let's just say the peacock-colored animal that's no longer in existence. So I think the creation of animals were a different purpose.
I always felt like that taking of the lamb for 4 days at Pesach and then having to be seen that you had it when that was an Egyptian god to the Egyptians, and then having to kill it, put the blood on the doorpost, and then you had to eat it. I never took that to be a sin offering. I took it as Hashem drawing the line and saying, okay, who is the ultimate sovereign, the gods of Egypt or me? Because their lives were really in danger by the Egyptians, because they thought at that season Aries came down from the heavens and inhabited a lamb, and if you killed one of those lambs, you were killing their god. So it was like, okay, am I the ultimate sovereign? And if they did do that, then the death angel passed over their home. So,
just for the record, that's true. It's not a sin offering, but it is a shalem offering, a peace offering. Because the peace offerings have to be shared with the other members of the community.
Right.
And the other thing to keep in mind is for the first 10 generations, man is not authorized to eat the animals.
Right.
So what is the tikkun of the animal? Why does the animal have to die if it's not for the priest to be fed?
Why did you just say peace offering?
In temple times, when the Passover offering was brought, the 4 days was testing, was showing the Egyptian who was the higher god. But it was also testing the Israelis to see if they would follow the directions. Because after all, their taskmasters should have taken them to task and stopped them from doing it, because the sheep represented their god. So they should have prevented the Israelis from slaughtering them. So, you know, the Egyptians were physically stronger, militarily stronger, and they could have destroyed the Jewish people. So it was a matter of trust in Hashem. That's what the test, that was the tikkun. And yes, there is a tikkun for each animal that has to be slaughtered in a kosher manner. It has a tikkun.
Mm-hmm. Everything does.
But it's more than one tikkun.
Right.
It's multiple. It's everyone who participates.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they who study the Corban sacrifice, which is the same as bringing it in our generation, or not. We're out of time, but you can see there's a lot of questions to be asked within the frame of just these two verses.
Yes.
We have a class tonight at the 7 o'clock West Coast time that will be the writings of the Ari. Shalom Gadol.
Shalom Gadol.
Shalom, everybody. Bye, Grandy.